You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast by the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Today's episode of the show, the first day of free agency, turned out to be an interesting one for the Denver Nuggets. It didn't look like it was going to be. In fact, I started recording the show before the Nuggets news really came down. Jamal Murray has signed a $170 million extension to stay with the Denver Nuggets. Going to talk about that here in segment one. In segments two and three, going to bounce around the league and just talk about some of the deals that were signed. Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, the Utah Jazz. And just talk about what, you know, those kind of mean for Denver going forward. But first, we have to start with the news that just broke. The Nuggets have signed Jamal Murray to an extension for $170 million over 5 years. Jamal Murray will stay in Denver for quite some time. This extension, just to get the details out, this extension actually doesn't begin until next season. So Jamal Murray, this coming 2019-20 season, will still be on that rookie scale contract. It starts after that. So Jamal Murray will be in Denver for six more years, or at least the contract length is for six more years. Five starting next year, plus this upcoming one. So the Nuggets, really the theme of today was keeping the core together, but this one is an interesting one for a couple reasons. First, the Nuggets would have, the way the contract works for Jamal Murray, the Nuggets could have not agreed to an extension this year, gone into next season with him as a restricted free agent, and the Nuggets could have matched any offer that would have come in. So had a team offered a max, they could have matched the max. They could have even extended him an offer next summer for this exact same contract. Said, you know, here's your five-year extension, take it. No other team could have offered him that fifth year and that much money, so he would have gotten more from Denver. Basically, this exact contract next year. And, you know, I think it would have been the safe and probably, personally, I don't really know why they wouldn't have done that. You know, at least from a protection standpoint, it's possible that, you know, Jamal Murray wanted that extension now. In fact, certainly he wanted it now. It's guaranteed money that he gets locked up now. And maybe it was a thing where Denver would have felt like the relationship with him would have gotten uncomfortable had they not worked out an extension for him. So maybe it was a scenario like that. But nonetheless, I always thought, you listen to the show long enough, you know, I think Jamal Murray is a heck of a talent. I think he has a lot of upside, but I don't think his upside is certain the way I thought Jokic's was two seasons ago. I think Jamal Murray still has kind of a wide range of outcomes from him. And the point guard position in particular is very, very deep in the NBA. Is Jamal Murray projected to be the best point guard in the NBA at any time over the next six seasons, which is the life of this? I would bet against it. I don't think it is. I don't think he is. Is he on pace to be a top five? I think even that, when you look at the talent in the league right now at the point guard position with Steph Curry and a Westbrook and you know, Damian Lillard, there's just a lot of players out there that, you know, for Jamal Murray to jump into that category, it's going to be awfully tough. Nonetheless, Denver, I think, was always probably going to offer him a big contract like this. 170 seems a little high, but they were always going to overpay or pay the top amount for their own guys. And so I'm surprised at the timing of it. I'm surprised that it happened this quickly on the first day of free agency. But here is the key. Denver did not, you know, Denver picked up Paul Millsap's option this year. That one of the reasons for that, I'm sure, is to keep their salary cap clear going forward. Had they gotten Paul Millsap to restructure his deal and gotten him back for 2 or 3 years at like $15 to $20 million, that's money that they would have been on the books down the line. As it is, Millsap expires this year. Next year, they'll have this contract, this Jamal Murray one, kick in, but it's almost like they'll be forming a new era from a salary cap standpoint. Maybe Millsap comes back on a cheaper, like a much, much cheaper deal or something like that. But from a salary cap standpoint, next year, Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Nikola Jokic, those will be the three big players. Whereas coming into last season, you know, Will Barton and Mason Plumlee and Paul Millsap were the guys from a salary cap standpoint that were making all the money. So Denver now committing their money to Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic and Gary Harris, clearly indicating that they believe Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic can be the first and second best player on a championship team. I don't know if I agree with that, but they clearly believe that to be the case. And more than anything, the way that they have handled this offseason, they are the one team that seems content to sort of stick with their process, to not skip steps as they have said, and just to kind of let this team breathe and grow as it is. So the fact that they did this, I guess, fits the MO of everything else that they have been trying to do this offseason so far and through this free agency period. But the Nuggets now are committed to these two guys, Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, as the cornerstones of their team. Now, Jamal Murray can be traded on this contract, so it could be one of those things where they're gearing up, but the contract becomes a bit difficult to trade this next season. In other words, I'd be surprised if Jamal Murray was traded in the next two or three anyway. I think Denver's committed to him for real. But certainly this next year, because he's only going to be making a couple million, whatever his rookie scale contract is, but his contract behind that will be for, you know, 30 plus million per year. So whatever team he would trade, they would trade him to, you'd have to get those salaries to match up, you know, for the trade to be legal. But the salary right now would be $5 million, but you'd have to trade him to a team that had $30 million over the next five seasons available. So I say all that to say Jamal Murray almost certainly sticking in Denver for a long time. This isn't some kind of, like, I think, first move and, oh, they're going to move him now. Maybe in a year or two or something like that, if they feel they need to move on, they would try. But this signing is a show of confidence that Jamal Murray can be the guy. Now, when Gary Harris signed that $84 million contract two off-seasons ago, a lot of people, myself included, felt like it was an overpay. And first of all, some of the incentives came out. It was really closer to $74 million, and I think that's probably more in line with what Gary's, you know, deserves. But Gary, over the last two seasons, not so much this last season, but the season immediately following his contract, he had the best year of his career and really took a big leap. Jamal Murray, I think, now is in a point where $170 million is an enormous amount of money. That is more money than Jamal Murray is going to be able to spend, quite frankly. The contracts in the NBA are so big and so bloated. Jamal Murray now has that sort of comfort and, you know, he's made it. He's arrived. Now it's going to be, can he make the big leap? Can he become the player that is worth that much? Because if he doesn't, I think he's already better than, say, an Andrew Wiggins type player. But, you know, there's players out there like Nick Batum, for example, that got max contracts. Batum's a great player. I can't remember if he made an All-Star team or close or something like that one year. But he's not thought of as a max caliber player. He's not even like a Tobias Harris max caliber player. Jamal Murray right now, I think, is below what is a typical max player. But he's 21 years old, 21, 22. You're betting on this contract over the next five seasons, and that really takes you into his prime, the actual peak of his prime of his career. And I think when you go through that, anything's possible. He could be worth it. He could not. But the Nuggets, I think, will sink or swim based on how well he performs under this contract over the next several years. Really interesting. The Nuggets have locked it up. They're going to not skip steps. And if the next step is a small one, they are still going to embrace it. I know a lot of Nuggets fans, I think, would be very disappointed if this Nuggets team won 54 games again next year, or even fewer, if they did not make it out of the first round. I know I would be disappointed as well. But it's at least on the table with how much teams have geared up this year and how the Nuggets are not trying to blink and push their chips in or accelerate the process. They seem perfectly content to let this group grow slowly and look at this as more of a 4 and 5 year window. You think about it, Gary Harris, 3 more years on the deal, Jokic, 4 or 5, now Jamal Murray, 6. So the Nuggets look at this as a 4 or 5 year window, not just a short, tiny window, and this contract sort of solidifies that. Is now in this place where every single free agency, it's like you shake the tree and the league just completely evolves into something new. We saw big players traded, signed elsewhere, a little bit of both. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Jimmy Butler, Kemba Walker, Tobias Harris. There was a lot of names thrown out today. And the league, I would say, with one caveat, the Kawhi Leonard caveat, the league is starting to round into shape. We're starting to see kind of what it looks like. So this episode of the show, I'm going to talk about that. Denver stood pretty pat. And it was kind of clear that was going to be the case. If you missed yesterday's show, had a great show with Brendan Vogt, Ryan Blackburn, two writers at Denver Stiffs, provided some great context to why Denver was standing pat. So I encourage you to go back and listen to that one, even though it happened before all of this other stuff took place. It still gives you a good idea, maybe some other perspectives about what Denver was doing. But I wanted to talk about these, and we can go ahead and get right into these. But the first one, you know, Tobias Harris stayed in Philly, and the 76ers are kind of interesting because they were a team that, like Denver, kind of started their process 5 years ago. Called it the process, the Trust the Process 76ers, and they kind of went all in on this roster that they had constructed this last year with Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler alongside their two cornerstone pieces and Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Well, you know, that was a really, really good roster. It looked like there was a chance they could lose both of those guys, both Harris and Butler. Turns out Butler is gone. I'm going to talk about him next. But Tobias Harris, in order to retain him, they paid him 5 years and $180 million. For reference, Jokic got 5 years and I think 148 or 54 million. Either way, significant, you know, 30 million less than what Tobias Harris made. Now, I know that a lot of Nuggets fans wanted Tobias Harris. One thing you have to see now in hindsight, and a lot of Nuggets fans were thinking, okay, they got to go all in. First of all, my personal opinion is that I really like Tobias Harris, but I do not think he is a max player. The way salary caps work in the NBA, you often overpay in free agency, and you often overpay for this caliber of player. Tobias Harris and LeBron James can make the exact same amount of money, and it's because of the way the salary cap was. If there was no salary cap, you know, LeBron might get especially in the height of his prime, he might get a $50, $60, $70 million contract. But because there's a maximum that you can allow, a max can be offered to both LeBron and to a player of Tobias Harris's caliber. So if Tobias Harris joined the Nuggets, he might be the second best player on the team, but he might be the fourth or fifth. And I think if the Nuggets were to contend, he would probably have to be the third, fourth, or fifth. And I just don't know that there was a realistic way for Denver to get him when it was going to cost that much. Denver would have had to, in order to make that work, Denver would have had to have lost Paul Millsap or gotten Paul Millsap to sign for very, very cheap, which I don't think would have happened. And probably had to have moved another piece or two, including somebody like Will Barton, maybe Mason Plumlee. Now, I know a lot of people want to be done with Will Barton, but you do have to ask yourself, the gap between a healthy Will Barton and Tobias Harris, while large, is probably not big enough to make up for your backup center, who is one of the best in the NBA, and for Paul Millsap, who's probably the team's second most important player. So I know it's easy to get upset, and some very high-profile writers, I'm not going to mention where, but well-respected, long-established writers, I think today spent all day on Twitter having sort of a childlike meltdown about the Nuggets not going after these types of players, but I think it's just as important to pass up difficult decisions as it is to sort of pull the trigger on the difficult decisions. And oftentimes we don't know till years down the line. But in this case, I would bet very strongly that the Nuggets, Tobias Harris would not have worked out for Denver to compete for a championship and would have really limited the possibilities for them down the road. Now, a second part of this is that Tobias Harris stays in the Eastern Conference. And I think this is a really big deal. He's a good player that could have been a good player in a lot of different Western Conference teams, not just Denver. And the fact that he gets to stay in the East, you know, Philadelphia doesn't really mean much to Denver. The only time Denver would ever see them is in a finals, at least in the playoffs. So the fact that he stays East, I think, is very, very good. Al Horford also joined them, which I think is kind of wild. I don't know that I necessarily love the Al Horford Joel Embiid fit, but they're both very talented and in Al Horford's case, a very smart player. So I think that they'll figure it out. And oftentimes, talent, even when it's not a perfect fit, it still, you know, it still goes a long way. Plus, Al Horford's a guy that if it doesn't work out, you can always trade him for a lot. He has a lot of value. A lot of teams would use him. So I think Philadelphia now becomes the favorites. This is wild. I think Philadelphia might be the favorites to win the Eastern Conference and maybe the whole NBA as things sit right now. They have those two great players in Simmons and Embiid. You add Harris, you add Horford. You know, I don't know that they have a ton of shooting around them, but I think it's a very, very good roster. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to contrast them and where they are at right now with Denver. I'm going to talk a little bit more about this in the last segment, but it's interesting to sort of contrast them with where Denver is. Denver still, you know, retains all of their players. Philadelphia more now, they are who they are going to be going forward. So just kind of an interesting thing there to think about. This episode of the show is brought to you by Hotels.com. Don't hate like your friend's trip. Book your own using Hotels.com. Also brought to you by Untuckit, really cool company where you can go to untuckit.com/lock, L-O-C-K-E, get 20% off. Cool shirts that you don't have to tuck in, which is, I almost never tuck any of my shirts in or anything like that because I'm a sloppy guy. All right, so Jimmy Butler, he also stayed in the East, could have gone to the Clippers, and I think, you know, just like with Tobias Harris, only even more so, Jimmy Butler out West, we already have seen this tune, Jimmy Butler and the Timberwolves knocking the Nuggets out of playoff contention 2 years ago. Just the talent being in the East, one of the themes of today, I thought today was a very good day for the Nuggets. Now, it could all come crashing down tomorrow, but I think it's a very good day for the Nuggets because a lot of talent was going to the other conference, and Jimmy Butler staying there, going to Miami, which is just, I think, kind of bizarre. Miami now becomes like a good but not great team, which is, I don't know. Anyway, so he stays in the Eastern Conference and away from Denver, and I think that's a win for Denver. So that one was really good. Kemba Walker going to the Celtics. You know, it keeps the Celtics relevant. I like that move a lot. I think Kemba Walker and Kyrie Irving is such a more talented player, in my opinion, but I don't love his decision-making and the way he plays. So the gap between impact, player impact, especially throughout a regular season, between Kemba and Kyrie, I think is actually not that steep. So the fact that the Celtics get him, that provides another foe out East. It you know, they're still a little thin in their front court, but I think it makes the Celtics stay relevant and kind of keep that Eastern Conference a little bit top-heavy, which is what it was this year. So, you know, and that's a good thing. And it also keeps Kemba away from the Lakers. You know, the Lakers right now are putting, it would appear, all of their eggs in the Kawhi Leonard basket. And I'll be honest, I think Kawhi Leonard is going there. I mean, well above 50% that this is how it all shakes out. And if it is, I'm not going to lie to you, Nuggets fans, it would be the darkest timeline, the darkest possible timeline for a Lakers team to build sort of a contender, you know, that much, not just a contender, but a near contender or a near perfect contender. But, you know, that's just that's on the table right now, and Denver has to sort of avoid that and hope that Kawhi chooses somewhere else. But Kemba, you know, Kemba could have been their backup plan, and I think Kemba, LeBron, and AD would have been a really good team as well. So the fact that he's in the East and with that Celtics team, it just, the Lakers now, they either become the most dominant team in the NBA or they have LeBron and Anthony Davis, which is great, but they're going to have a really hard time filling out the rest of the roster. So I think You look at it right now, and it's really feast or famine, not just for the Lakers, but for the league at large. Durant and Kyrie to Brooklyn is an interesting one. We've known that this rumor was out there for a long time. First of all, I want to say, I get a lot of, I always find it interesting when fans, there's this like sort of almost natural inclination to hate the media. And, you know, players obviously hate them, and I get why players do. They don't like being interviewed. Players want to control their own narratives, and they feel like the media is sort of their enemy in that they can't control the media. They can't often get the media to write about them the way that they want. If the media is critical of them, you know, the media sometimes exposes certain things that they wish didn't come to light and different things like that. So there's this, I get why players don't like it. I don't think that they're right to not like the media. I get there's certain media that I obviously, first of all, the media is made up of like hundreds of thousands of people. It's not any one thing. Everybody does it differently. It's really just individuals of people. But collectively, they're often lumped in, and I get why players are upset. I do think players need to sort of understand the role of media, because sometimes the way athletes talk about sports reporters, it trickles down to way we, you know, talk about and trust the media at large, including the people covering much more important things, and creates this layer of distrust. But what I find interesting, and the reason I brought this up, player is that fans often side with the media or side with the players, when oftentimes players are talking about fans when they're talking about media. They're talking about social media. They're talking about people who aren't, you know, credentialed reporters or anything like that. They're just fans, maybe have a fan site, or maybe they're just popular Twitter personalities talking trash about a player. The players take it out on the media, and then fans say, yeah, screw the media, when actually the players are talking about the fans talking the trash. This is what I kind of find funny. But I bring that up because Kevin Durant, if you recall, Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant have long been rumored to be going to New York. Some great reporters, including Ethan Strauss, brought this to light and uncovered this over the course of the season that, hey, all of this stuff is going on. Very well sourced, credible reporter. And KD publicly called him out in a press conference, told him to grow up. And said that he was a liar and he has no sources. Well, lo and behold, here we are. Durant and Kyrie are in Brooklyn, which everybody saw coming. And KD took the opportunity to try to tarnish this very well-respected reporter's reputation. So I say all that to say that you really, really take all of these things with a grain of salt, because so often I think fans rush to a player's defense just inherently. And like, it's their natural default to kind of go to that, when often very well-respected journalists are under fire and under siege for reporting what turns out to be very true. But Durant and Kyrie out there, I don't love this team. I don't think it's going to work very well. Turns out that they wanted DeAndre Jordan so bad, they both took a discount, which DeAndre Jordan, not even as good, maybe not even the best center on that team. Jared Allen, already a guy that probably would have was tailor-made for to be part of that super team. So players, not always the best GMs. Durant and Kyrie, I'm very curious to see how that Brooklyn team does. Now, they have a great coach. They have a great front office. They've built a great culture, kind of like Denver. They've really built a great culture there, and they're in the New York market. So they, you know, I wouldn't necessarily bet against them, but I just don't love what they're doing. But thankfully, two players that went east, both players who could have gone to the Clippers, stayed west, or maybe even the Lakers. And then lastly, Utah was the big one today. I think Utah's the winner of the offseason so far. They got a lot better. First, the addition of Mike Conley. Mike Conley, one of the more underrated players. It's almost a cliche to call Mike Conley underrated, because he was in Memphis, all-star caliber player that never got the respect. He wasn't a flashy scorer or anything like that, but consistently one of the best point guards in the NBA. Defensively, when we talk about matching up with Utah now, Denver matching up, defensively, you know, Mike Conley's a really, really smart and good defender, and Denver is a team that, you know, they're crafty, they're really smart offensively, but I think they're susceptible to smart defensive players, and Mike Conley's going to be a guy that's going to make, I think is going to really be a tough challenge for Jamal Murray, and not just Jamal Murray, but the Murray-Jokic two-man game that is the staple of the Nuggets offense, especially in a playoff series. So automatically you give him that. Offensively, he was such a good two-man player with Mark Gasol, and I think when you put Rudy Gobert into that equation, he's going to be right there with him. So the Jazz are going to be good. That's a heck of an addition in Mike Conley. Then today they get Bojan Bogdanovic, who's just another shooter and floor spacer. They needed that. They needed an extra scoring option. Now, here's what's interesting about them. They also add Ed Davis, who I think is really good. So what's interesting is they lose Derek Favors. Now, I think when you look at it in aggregate, the Jazz got a lot better. I really think the Jazz are significantly better. They might even be favorites to win the West as we speak at this very moment. Donovan Mitchell, as good as he is, I think having Mike Conley there to do the actual point guarding duties allows Donovan Mitchell to really become his best self, which is just a pure scorer. There's going to be a little bit more spacing. I mean, lineups with my guy Joe Ingles and Bojan Bogdanovic on the court are going to space the floor a lot better, including also, you know, you can throw out lineups that have Ingles, Bogdanovic, Mitchell, and Mike Conley. That's four good shooters, and then one of the best rim-rolling, you know, gravity guys in Gobert on the court. So they're going to be great. But where they're weak is, if a lot of people last year made a big deal about, oh, Jokic gets shut down by Gobert. I never bought into that, and the reason I didn't is because Jokic wasn't guarded by Gobert. He was guarded by Derek Favors, who Favors has these really long arms, and he's incredibly strong. Which one-on-one, I think Jokic would eat up Favors, and that wouldn't be too much of a problem. He's very good at that. But Gobert would just guard Millsap, sink off of him, and then he had put so much pressure on Jokic as a scorer because he could just rotate over. It's really, they were able to double-team him in effect. Now, I think that now they're going to have a lot harder of a time doing that. I think they could play Ed Davis in that role, but Ed Davis isn't, in my opinion, as good as Derek Favors is. So I think it's going to be a little bit more tricky, but most likely what's going to happen is they're going to play their offensive lineups, and they'll be great offensively. Maybe Denver can't stop them. They had a hard time with, you know, the Capellas of the world and the guys that can rim roll like that. So maybe Gobert will be even more effective offensively, but defensively I think they'll struggle. Nonetheless, Utah's the one team that I look out west and I go, man, they really got a heck of a lot better, and it's really going to cause some issues for Denver. But that's it. We're going to have to wait for the rest. We'll see where Kawhi Leonard lands. If you are out there a Nuggets fan, I think you have to really be hoping that Kawhi Leonard does not go to the Lakers, because that would certainly alter the landscape of the NBA, certainly alter Denver's sort of potential over the next couple years. Kawhi Leonard and Anthony Davis right in the middle of their prime, so they're not going anywhere over the next 2-3 seasons in terms of talent. LeBron might be a little bit older, but he's still a heck of a player, so That's the only thing to keep an eye on, but this week will be a big one. A couple surprise guests for you this week that I think you're going to really, really enjoy. As we get ready, the Nuggets have practice for Summer League tomorrow, so we're going to have some cool interviews on our YouTube channel, some great stuff on Twitter, articles on Denver Stiffs, and then this show, like I said, you're going to want to stay glued to it because there's some really cool guests coming up and some neat stuff that we're doing with the show. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again all week with brand new episodes.
Thank you for listening to the Locked on Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.